It's so good to be talking to you. I would like to read a passage of scripture to you from Exodus chapter 20. It's a part of the Ten Commandments as given by Moses on Mount Sinai. It says in verse 8 of Exodus 20, remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. 6 days shalt thou labor and do all thy work. But the seventh day is a Sabbath unto Jehovah thy God. In it thou shalt do no work, thou, nor thy son, nor thy daughter, thy manservant, nor thy maidservant, nor thy cattle, nor thy stranger that is within thy gates. For in 6 days Jehovah made the heaven and earth, and the sea, and all that in them is, and rested the seventh day. Wherefore Jehovah blessed the Sabbath day and hallowed it. The Sabbath day was a part of the Mosaic law. It was a part, in fact, of the Ten Commandments. Usually we refer to the Sabbath day as the seventh day. And that's because the different Sabbaths that God afforded the children of Israel under the old law came on the seventh day, or the seventh year, or the seventh year. It was associated with the number seven. We'll see the significance of that later. But the word Sabbath does not mean seventh. It means rest. It comes from the Hebrew word Shabbat, which is defined by the lexicons as intermission or to cease. And its accepted meaning in the context of the Bible is a day of rest or a period of rest. In Hebrews chapter 4 and verse 9, it says, "There remaineth therefore a Sabbath rest for the people of God." A Sabbath rest, that is a prescribed rest. Now, many people believe today that the observance of the Sabbath as it was observed under the old law is binding upon Christians. I don't believe that, and I'd like to explain to you why I don't accept that as being from God, that is, the Sabbath day observance as being from God. First of all, let's look at the origin of the Sabbath. The origin of the Sabbath, of course, is it is from God, and it has to do with God's rest at the end of creation. In Genesis chapter 2 and verse 3, it says, "And God blessed the seventh day and hallowed it, because that in it he rested from all his work which God had created and made." Now, he hallowed the seventh day, and it appears that he hallowed the seventh day just as soon as he finished creation, which he may have done. He probably did. But we have to remember that the book of Genesis was written many years after that. In fact, the book of Genesis was written by Moses around 1400 B.C., and it was written in the cult, in the context of the Israeli culture that was being created as the children were traveling through the wilderness on their way to the land of Canaan. When was it set aside as a day of rest? When was it actually enjoined upon the people to rest? Well, the first mention of the Sabbath day, or a Sabbath day rest, is Exodus chapter 16 and verses 23 through 26. And there it has to do with the gathering of manna, as God had provided them food in the wilderness. It says there, "And he said unto them, This is that which Jehovah hath spoken. Tomorrow is a solemn rest, a holy Sabbath unto Jehovah. Bake that which ye will bake, and boil that which ye will boil, and all that remaineth over, lay up for you to be kept until the morning. And they laid it up till morning, as Moses bade, and it did not become foul, neither was there any worm therein. And Moses said, Eat that today, for today is a Sabbath unto Jehovah. Today ye shall not find it in the field. 6 days shall ye gather it, but on the seventh day is a Sabbath. In it there shall be none." Now, this all occurred after the children of Israel had already crossed the Red Sea. And this is the first time, the first indication that we have anywhere, that the Sabbath day was enjoined upon the people as any sort of a rest. And that rest was from the gathering of the manna and the preparing of that manna for food for the next day. Now, there was no command or example given until after their deliverance from Egypt. And not only that, but there was no command or example of the Sabbath day being kept by their fathers, the patriarchs. In Deuteronomy chapter 5 and verses 1 through 3, Deuteronomy 5 verses 1 through 3, it says, "And Moses called unto all Israel and said unto them, Hear, O Israel, the statutes and the ordinances which I speak in your ears this day, that ye may learn them and observe to do them. Jehovah our God made a covenant with us at Horeb. Jehovah made not this covenant with our fathers, but with us, even us, who are all of us here alive today. And then he gives the Ten Commandments. And as we read down about verse 13 is where he gives the Sabbath day as a commandment. But now I want you to notice what he says. He says that the covenant was given at Mount Horeb, which was where Mount Sinai was. It was the range of mountains where Mount Sinai was. And he also says in verse 3 here, Jehovah made not this covenant with our fathers. In other words, what was contained in this covenant was not made with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob as it was made with them. So, it wasn't something that was given beforehand, but was given when the Ten Commandments were given. It was given to commemorate their deliverance from Egyptian bondage. You look at Deuteronomy 5, verse 13, 6 days shalt thou labor and do all thy work. Now, verse 14, but the seventh day is a Sabbath unto Jehovah thy God. In it thou shalt not do any work, thou nor thy son, nor thy daughter, nor thy manservant, nor thy maidservant, nor thine ox, nor thine ass, nor any of the cattle, nor thy stranger that is within thy gates, and thy manservant and thy maidservant may rest as well as thou. And thou shalt remember that thou wast a servant in the land of Egypt. Now, in Egyptian bondage, they had no rest. There was no day off. They had to work straight through. Well, God saw the oppression that that created for the people, and so he did not want that oppression to continue in Israel, either for the people or for their servants. And so he commanded a Sabbath rest for all of them. Now notice once again, verse 15, thou shalt remember that thou wast a servant in the land of Egypt, and that Jehovah thy God brought thee out thence by a mighty hand and by an outstretched arm. Therefore, Jehovah thy God commanded thee to keep the Sabbath day. Now he commanded them to do it for their benefit. Jesus said that the Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. And so here was a day of rest, an enforced rest, which all men need. You know, some people won't take the rest that they need. Well, they had to under the old law because God commanded it. And some people not only won't take the rest, but they won't allow others to rest. But here is a prescription that God gives to cure that kind of a problem. Now, God chose the same day that he rested on as a day of rest for the children of Israel. It says once again in Genesis 2 and verse 3, and God blessed the seventh day and hallowed it, because in it he rested from all his work which God had created and made. And then we look back at Exodus chapter 20 and verse 11, where the Sabbath day is first commanded. And it says, for in 6 days Jehovah made heaven and earth, the sea and all that in them is, and rested on the seventh day. Wherefore Jehovah blessed the Sabbath day and hallowed it. He blessed the day of rest and hallowed it. The reason for the command of the Sabbath day then was a memorial for the deliverance of God, of the children of Israel from Egyptian bondage. And the reason for the choosing of that particular day, that is the seventh day, was that was the day that God rested. So they could remember not only their deliverance from Egyptian bondage, but they could also remember that God had created the heavens and the earth. Now we come to a question that is peculiar. A lot of people don't have an understanding of this, but we need to understand for whom the Sabbath day was intended. Was it intended for everyone, or was it just for a special people? The answer to that question is found in Exodus 31, verses 12 through 18. Exodus 31, verses 12 through 18. Now there it says, and Jehovah spake unto Moses, saying, speak thou also unto the children of Israel, saying, verily ye shall keep my Sabbaths, for it is a sign between me and you throughout your generations, that ye may know that I am Jehovah who sanctifieth you. Ye shall keep the Sabbath, therefore, for it is holy unto you. Everyone that profaneth it shall surely be put to death. For whosoever doeth any work therein, that soul shall be cut off from among his people. 6 days shall work be done, but on the seventh day is a Sabbath of solemn rest. Holy to Jehovah, whosoever doeth any work on the Sabbath day, he shall surely be put to death. Wherefore the children of Israel shall keep the Sabbath, to observe the Sabbath throughout their generations for a perpetual covenant. It is a sign between me and the children of Israel forever. For in 6 days Jehovah made heaven and earth, and on the seventh day he rested and was refreshed. And he gave unto Moses when he had made an end of communing with him upon Mount Sinai, the two tables of the testimony, the tables of stone, written with the finger of God. Now, a couple of observations we want to make about this passage. Number one, it was a sign between God and Israel. The command to Moses in verse 13 was, "Speak thou also unto the children of Israel." He wasn't speaking to the Gentiles. He wasn't speaking to the Egyptians. He wasn't speaking to the Canaanites. He was speaking to the children of Israel, the descendants of Jacob. You look down at verse 16 where he says, "Wherefore the children of Israel shall keep the Sabbath," the children of Israel. And then you look at verse 17 where it says, "It is a sign between me and the children of Israel forever." A sign between me and the children. But it's not a sign between God and other peoples. The Canaanites were not to keep the Sabbath day law. The Egyptians were not to keep the Sabbath day law. The Persians were not. And in this day and time, if the Sabbath day law was still in effect for the Jews, it would not be in effect for me because I don't have any Jewish blood. It was a sign between God and the children of Israel. And nobody else was included. Nobody else had that bound upon them. In fact, the patriarchs of Israel did not have enjoined upon them Sabbath day keeping. You cannot find a command or an example with reference to the Sabbath day in the life of Abraham, Isaac, or Jacob. There's no penalty exacted for breaking the Sabbath day. But under Judaism, under the Israeli law given on Mount Sinai, there was a command. There was an example where an individual broke the Sabbath day and was put to death. He was stoned to death. And there in that command is implied a penalty for not keeping it. And stoning to death was the penalty for not keeping the law of Moses, not keeping the Sabbath day law of the Ten Commandments. Now, here is something else that I believe that we need to understand if we're going to understand the truth about the Sabbath day. And that is that the Sabbath day has ended. Now somebody says, "Now wait a minute, David. We read from Exodus chapter 31 a couple of passages that need to be cited once again." Verse 16, he says, "Wherefore the children of Israel shall keep the Sabbath to observe the Sabbath throughout their generations for a perpetual covenant. It is a sign between me and the children of Israel forever." Well, I'd like to examine some of these expressions and just see what they mean. Do they mean forever without any end whatsoever? Or do they mean without any end as long as God intended? And I think that we'll see that that's what was meant by these expressions. For example, in Exodus chapter 30 and verse 8, it says, "When Aaron lighted the lamps at even, he shall burn it, a perpetual incense before Jehovah throughout your generations." And yet who burns incense perpetually today? Nobody does. Nobody feels like it's necessary. Why? Because they understand that the burning of incense was for the people under the Old Testament law. It was a ceremonial law under Judaism. In Genesis chapter 17 and verse 13, we find that circumcision was intended to be a permanent ordinance honored by the people of God. It says there, "He that is born in thy house and he that is bought with thy money must needs be circumcised. And my covenant shall be in your flesh for an everlasting covenant." That's Genesis chapter 17 and verse 13. This is where God is enjoining upon Abraham the ordinance of circumcision as a kind of signature on the covenant. God didn't have to sign the covenant because his word is good, but Abraham had already been found in two lies, and so he had to somehow guarantee that he was going to keep the covenant, and his signature on the covenant was circumcision. But how is circumcision perceived today in the law of Christ, that is, under Christ? Paul writes in Galatians chapter 5 and verse 2, "Behold, I, Paul, say unto you that if ye receive circumcision, Christ will profit you nothing." That is, receive circumcision, of course, as a religious rite as pertaining to coming into Christ, being a part of Christ. Now, once again, in Genesis 17 and verse 13, God told Abraham, "My covenant shall be in your flesh for an everlasting covenant." And that covenant was circumcision. Paul says, on the other hand, if you receive circumcision, like Abraham was commanded, that Christ will profit you nothing. Well, why? Because we're under a different law today. You look at verse 3 of Galatians 5. He says, "Yea, I testify again to every man that receiveth circumcision, that he's a debtor to do the whole law. Ye are severed from Christ. Ye who would be justified by the law, you're fallen away from grace. Can a man fall from grace? Can a saved man sin so as to be lost? Yes, if he blasphemes, if he rebels, if he sinks back to immorality, if he receives the ordinances of the old law and binds them, if he accepts the authority of the Old Testament law, it says that he is severed from Christ, he has fallen away from grace. What does God regard, and who does God regard today? In verse 6 he says, "For in Christ Jesus neither circumcision availeth anything, nor uncircumcision, but faith working through love." What counts today is faith working through love, faith causing us to obey God. And yet, circumcision is called in Genesis chapter 17 and verse 13 an everlasting covenant. We'll go a little bit further. In Jonah chapter 2 and verse 6, Jonah in his prayer says, "I went down to the bottoms of the mountains." He's talking about when he was swallowed by the fish and went down to the bottom of the ocean, underneath and below all the, even the roots of the mountains, the bottoms of the mountains. He says, "The earth with its bars closed upon me forever. Yet hast thou brought up my life from the pit, O Jehovah my God." He was closed in by the bars of the earth forever, and yet God delivered him. He wasn't there literally forever, but as long as God allowed him to stay. And then he was delivered. He was no longer closed in by the bars of the earth. So that word forever, the expression forever, doesn't mean without any end whatsoever, but it means as long as God intends. Now, in Exodus chapter 31, it says in verse 16 that the Sabbath was to be observed throughout the generations of Israel. But Israel does not exist as it did then. And there are many things that God gave as a permanent arrangement that do not bind upon us today. For instance, the Day of Atonement sacrifices. In Leviticus chapter 16 and verse 34, concerning the offering of the bullock and the two goats on the Day of Atonement, God says this, "And this shall be an everlasting statute unto you to make atonement for the children of Israel because of their sins once in the year." And he did as Jehovah commanded Moses. It's supposed to be an everlasting statute. And yet the writer of Hebrews says in Hebrews chapter 10 and verses 1 through 4, Hebrews chapter 10 and verses 1 through 4, "For the law, having a shadow of the good things to come, not the very image of the things, can never the same sacrifices, year by year, which they offer continually, make perfect them that draw nigh. Else would they not have ceased to be offered, because the worshippers, having been once cleansed, would have had no more consciousness of sins. But in those sacrifices there is a remembrance made of sins year by year." Now note what he says here in verse 4. "For it is impossible that the blood of bulls and goats should take away sins." Now, concerning these sacrifices, he says in verse 9, "Then he said," that is Jesus said, "Lo, I am come to do thy will. He taketh away the first, that he may establish the second." What did he take away? He took away those everlasting statute sacrifices of the bull and the goats, so that he could establish the second. Well, what was the second? He says in verse 10, "By which will we have been sanctified through the offering of the body of Jesus Christ once for all." The sacrifice of Jesus on the cross is not effective. It has no power until we cease offering the bulls and the goats, the ineffectual sacrifices of the bulls and the goats. In Deuteronomy chapter 15 and verses 16 and 17, it says, "And it shall be, if he say unto thee, I will not go out from thee, because he loveth thee and thy house, because he is well with thee, then thou shalt take an awl and thrust it through the ear, through his ear, under the door, and he shall be thy servant forever, and also unto thy maidservant thou shalt do likewise." In this passage, Moses is talking about the servant in the house, and it comes time for the servant to be let go, but he doesn't want to leave. Well, what do? Well, you pierce his ear, and then he's allowed to stay and serve you, it says, forever. But everybody knows that he doesn't serve forever, because eventually he's got to die, and his service comes to an end. So here are these phrases that we find in Exodus 31. throughout their generations, a perpetual covenant and a sign between me and the children of Israel forever, forever, perpetual, throughout their generations. And we find that in the usage of these expressions is not the idea that there would be no end to what is being described, but that they would continue as long as God had that intent for them. Now, the Ten Commandments as a body of law has been done away with. In 2 Corinthians chapter 3, Paul makes a contrast between the law that is written upon our hearts, not with ink, and not on tables of stone. Well, what is this law, this reference to the law on tables of stone? Well, it has reference to the Ten Commandments, which are written on the stone tablets. First, Moses broke them, and then God had to write them all over again. But then we come down to verse 7. It says, but if the ministration of death written and engraven on stones came with glory, so that the children of Israel could not look steadfastly upon the face of Moses for the glory of his face, which glory was passing away. Well, here he talks about ministration of death, the law of death written and engraven on stones, and it's passing away. It says in verse 10, for verily that which hath not been made glorious, by reason of, in this respect, by reason of the glory which surpasseth. For if that which passeth away was with glory, much more that which remaineth is in glory. Here's a clear statement by Paul that the Ten Commandments, that which was written on the stone tablets, was to pass away. It's important for us to note that the covenant, the Ten Commandments, the tables of stone are all expressions that describe the old covenant. In 1 Kings chapter 8 and verse 9, it says there was nothing in the ark save the two tables of stone which Moses put there at Horeb. In verse 21 it says, concerning the Holy of Holies in the temple, Solomon says, and there have I set a place for the ark wherein is the covenant. Now in verse 9, the two tables of stone are in the ark of the covenant. In verse 21 it says that the covenant is that which is in the ark of the covenant. And so we have the covenant there and the tables of stone being more or less equated. That which was written on the table of stone, of course, being the Ten Commandments. Now, in Jeremiah 31, verses 31 and 32, God says through Jeremiah the prophet, behold, the days come, saith Jehovah, that I will make a new covenant with the house of Israel, the house of Judah, not according to the covenant that I made with their fathers in the day that I took them by the hand to bring them out of the land of Egypt, which my covenant they break, although I was a husband unto them, saith Jehovah. He promises here a covenant, a new covenant, which is not like the old covenant. In Hebrews chapter 8 and verses 6 through 9, the writer of Hebrews furnishes us an inspired commentary on this passage. He says in verse 6, but now he obtained, that is Christ obtained, a ministry the more excellent by so much as he is also the mediator of a better covenant, which hath been enacted upon better promises. For if that first covenant had been found faultless, then would no place have been sought for a second. For finding fault with them, he saith, behold, the days come, saith the Lord, that I will make a new covenant with the house of Israel, with the house of Judah, not according to the covenant that I made with their fathers. We have been promised a new covenant that is not like the old covenant. It is not like the old covenant that is written on the tables of stone that includes the Ten Commandments and the Sabbath day observance. I want you to note what Paul describes as the process of salvation for Gentile Christians. He says of them in Colossians chapter 2 and verse 13, and you being dead through your trespasses, the uncircumcision of your flesh. Now, first of all, what caused these individuals to be dead? Their sins, their trespasses, and the uncircumcision of their flesh, that is, they were not under the covenant of God. He says, you did he make alive together with him? Now, to make somebody alive who is dead because of sin and uncircumcision, what do you have to do? You have to remove the sin and the significance of uncircumcision. So what did God do? He says that he made us alive together with him, having forgiven us all our trespasses, having blotted out the bond written in ordinances that was against us, which was contrary to us, he had taken it out of the way, nailing it to the cross. What is the bond written in ordinances that was against the Gentiles or contrary to them? It was, in fact, the law of Moses. And what did he do to them? He nailed them to the cross. Well, what is the implication of that? He says in verse 16, let no man therefore judge you or condemn you with respect to meat or drink. Those are meat and drink offerings offered according to the law, or in respect of a feast day or a new moon or a Sabbath day. Don't let anybody condemn you if you do not keep the Sabbath day. Why? Because it is not binding on us today. He says in verse 17, these things are a shadow of the things to come, but the body is Christ. There are parallels between the ordinances of the old law and what Christ gives us on the new covenant. But those parallels, those types that we find in the Old Testament are not binding. The antitype, that which they refer to in the New Testament, that's where the significance is. And so we don't have to offer the meat offerings or the drink offerings. We don't have to worry about the feast days or the new moons or the months. What we need to be concerned with is not the Sabbath day, but the things that Christ has ordered under the new covenant. The only conclusion that we can draw, if we're going to be consistent from the scriptures, and we do want to go by the scriptures, is that the Sabbath day is not binding upon us today. It's not something that God demands of us that we keep today, but rather that we enjoy the blessings that we have under Christ or through Christ under Him. Thank you very much for listening, and please tune in next week.